You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
And this is the second in our new feature focusing on World of Work. And it is great pleasure to introduce you to Otis Letswalo, who is our guest this half an hour. We're going to be talking about salary negotiations. And if you want to call in, if you want practical tips, maybe you are in a dilemma. It's time for you to start negotiating with your bosses about a possible increase. If you are lucky enough to face that prospect, how should that conversation play out? Or maybe you've just been made a job offer and someone says to you, how much do you think you get? So what are some of the headaches that you have had that perhaps you are going through currently in relation to salary negotiations? We'll try and do our best to help you out. Give us a call if you are in Joburg on 011-883-0702. And if you are listening in Cape Town, you can get hold of us on 021-446-0567. Otis is a human resource and employee relation consultant at Yellowstone and Letswalo Consulting. Otis, thank you so much for coming in today. Much appreciated.
You're welcome, sir.
Salary negotiations can be very tricky, eh? Because for some reason, many of us find it hard to confidently look someone in the eye and say, I'm worth 60,000 rand. And sometimes we may even have confidence in one part of the interview process, but not in the rest. I can be able to tell you, Otis, you need me in your company. Here is my skill set. And I sound as confident as hell. And then 5 minutes later, Otis says, okay, you've got the job. How much do you want? And then I start drooping my shoulders and I look to the ground. Okay. Why is that?
First of all, good morning to the listeners. First, let's unpack issues that have to do with the topic, which is which are influencing the topic at hand. Now, the first thing that one has to take into account is the level of the job category, the person and job specifications required for the post, key performance areas and indicators, the package offered by the prospective employer, the skills of the prospective job applicant or the current incumbent has to offer for the to the job. Now, here we are talking about two aspects, one job applicants and one existing employees. Now, first of all, salaries are regulated by the company's policies and procedures. Inclusive in those policies will be the employee benefits. Now, these policies and procedures must also be read with some companies have what you call job evaluation committees, which evaluate how much is a job worth. Now, when there's a vacancy in a particular industry, the company will normally advertise the position in the press and they will stipulate the job requirements, including the person's specifications, inclusive of the package that they are offering. Now, it's a bit tricky at times for a person to say, I'm going to negotiate my package, because most companies have a structured policy in terms of the packages they offer. Now, when you apply for a position, you have to take into account what the company is offering and whether do you fall within that range. Now, if you feel you fall within that range or you're suitably qualified, as we normally put it, you can go for the job. Now, let's come to the main issue of answering your question. How do you negotiate? In most cases, during interviews, panelists never ask you how much you're looking for. They will ask you questions sort of to find out the skills that you have, the expertise and the experience. And they are going to determine if those skills are worth bringing on board to the company. This is the package they'll offer you. In most cases, you find that salary structures, there's an entry level, mid-range, and the top range. Now, if for argument's sake, the company is offering you 60 grand, obviously, if you are falling within an income bracket and you feel you qualify for a job, go for it. But it's rare that you get an opportunity where they ask you during the interview as to how much you are worth. Unless if you are diplomatic enough to try and bring the topic through the back door by saying, this is how much I'm worth.
But Otis, it differs from, obviously, from sector to sector, right? Yes, because, yeah. I mean, before I entered media, I worked in the consulting sector, and in the consulting space, all of us who entered got exactly the same salary. It was quite a transparent process, and each of the tiers up as you progress, it was very clear what you're going to be paid. And it wasn't the case where you wonder, I wonder if Otis gets more than me, even though we started on the same level at the same time. It was very transparent. And I suppose the only examples I have, which are outside things like finance, management, consulting, etc., currently, is the creative industries. Our industry within which journalists work, for example, is a fantastic example.
Right.
And all the creative jobs in general, whether we talk about advertising, marketing, where these things are highly unregulated.
Right.
I have no clue what other writers who write for Mail and Guardian get. I only know what I get from the editor, for example.
Okay.
And that's where sometimes the awkwardness comes in. So let's maybe distinguish between two categories.
Right.
The folks that enter companies where there is a reasonably transparent process, including in the newspaper where it says in the advertising of the job section of the Sunday Times, this is the package. And then we'll talk about where that's an open conversation.
Right.
Let's firstly stick with the ones where the package is advertised. First question, practically. What is this thing that sometimes trips us over where it says total cost to company? So there you are, you get excited. You think you're going to get R1 million a year. It's cost to company. Mm-hmm. Then you get your monthly payslip and you're like, oh, my take-home pay is like 20,000.
Okay.
But I thought I could now go back to the village and say I'm a millionaire.
Okay. All right. The cost to the company includes various aspects that goes with the job. It will include your monthly salary, which is times by 13 or 12, depending if the company has a 13th check. It will include your medical aid. If you are, for argument's sake, a senior position, it will include petrol cost, cell phone cost, and some other benefits, which the company will, if they convert it to monetary terms, it will reach that income bracket of R1 million for the total year.
Is it useful to ask for a dummy payslip to try and see how that breaks down?
Normally, if the company selects you as a preferred candidate during the interview, and if they're satisfied that you meet all the requirements, and they're going to make you an offer, they'll write you a letter of offer. And in some companies, they would ask you to provide them with a salary slip because they want to have an idea as to how much you are earning. If, for argument's sake, you are earning, like I said, 60,000 and they are offering 62, there's no point in them calling you for a second interview if they feel that they cannot meet but your requirements. But if the company desperately need your skills. Here we're talking in terms of supply and demand.
Sure.
Whereby your skills are rare and the supply thereof is very low. You're in a better position to negotiate for a higher salary. Now, if they ask you for a salary slip, the main idea is for them to have an indication how much you are earning. But for you to be asking them for a dummy pay slip, there's no harm in doing it. They can offer you because you will have to explain as to why you want. Then you tell them that I want to inform myself. Remember, before you join a company, also wants to know how does the company, what do you refer to as company culture?
Mm-hmm.
You want Absolutely. To, the more you know about the company, the better. And in other cases, one has to do a research as to what is the market value, the market rate of the position that these people are offering you.
Sure. On the question of the payslip, in your experience as a professional, how do companies respond to people like me? I don't have many examples because I've only done this two or three times, but I've got away with it every time. I don't give people my last payslip. It's none of your business. In general, what advice do you give, particularly for people who are first-time employees or second or third time? Should you share your last payslip or not? You see, because people have a fear. I mean, let's keep it practical. It's very obvious. I might think to myself, okay, maybe I can convince Kaya FM to pay me R200,000 a month as a presenter.
Right.
If they know that I was getting 5 cents per month at Prime Media, they will realize that actually they can get me for cheaper than they had thought. But maybe for the first time in my life, right, I'm willing to assert my economic value. But I didn't do that at 702. Okay. So why must I reveal my payslip? Because it can give them a negotiating advantage.
Right. The requirement from the prospective employer is reasonable. And by requesting your CV, I mean your salary slip, they want documentary proof as to how much you actually earn. It has nothing to do with, you know, giving them an advantage, because obviously they have determined how much they're going to offer you. Mm. They just want to play along the figures as to if you earn so much, if they offer you so much, would you accept it or not? Mm. But I would advise job seekers to make their salary available if the prospective employer requires one, because there's nothing confidential.
It doesn't disadvantage you.
No, it does not. It actually gives you more advantage, because they'll actually see how much you're earning. What are the other benefits you have that they may not have? And they may try to improve them, include them in your prospective, in your forthcoming package, if they did not have. For argument's sake, if they don't offer medical aid, you will simply say, I'm from the company where I'm currently enjoying a medical aid benefit, and you people are not offering it. I would appreciate if you can consider it. If they say they don't, then you can negotiate for convert the medical benefits into monetary terms, which they would include into your salary.
Okay, 18 minutes after 11. If you've got a question for Otis, he's a specialist when it comes to human resources and employee matters. And we're talking about the question of the salary that you might get once you have been given a job, if you're lucky enough. And also, how do you negotiate a raise after a year, for example? Let's say your contract is up for renewal. We're going to have that discussion as well. But if you want to ask a question, maybe these are some dilemmas you have in relation to your own salary, your own packages, and you're not quite sure how to handle. Let's see whether we can help you in Cape Town on 021-446-0567 and here in Jersey on 011-883-0702.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
22 minutes after 11. Otis, just put on your headphones for me. We're going to talk about some of the other factors in relation to how salary agreements are structured, right, through collective processes, performance reviews. But before we do so, let's just hear from our callers and you can try and help them as much as you can. Right. Jeffrey, good morning to you.
Morning, Yubi. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm okay, man. Yubi, I just want to find out from the HR bit. I actually joined in the company where I was taken in as a contractor, and then you find that the salary package was well structured. Well, it was good. And later on, they asked me to join in to be in a permanent position, and you find that they dropped the salary way less than what they were offering on a contract base. But on the other hand, you find that the other guys who are working on contract base are getting paid, well, I'll say like double what you're getting as a permanent staff. How do you go about negotiating or talking to the employer, the current employer as a person?
That is so interesting, Jeffrey. That is very interesting. Otis, I was under the impression that the experience would normally be the other way around, that there are all sorts of perks, non-income related benefits to being a full-time staff member compared to being a contractor, for example. But Jeffrey's got a different experience.
Okay, let's first unpack the meaning of a contractor. We have two types of contracts. One is a fixed-term contract, which you enter into between yourself and the employer for a fixed term. Let's say, for argument's sake, 5 years or so. Now, in your contract of employment, there will be conditions that will be specified, which would include your benefits, your salary, your leave pay, you name it. Now, in the case of Jeffrey, he was employed as a contractor. I'm not quite sure as to what contractor is referring to, fixed term, or because people have a tendency of misusing the term contractor.
What kind of contract did you have, Jeffrey?
It was a month-to-month contract.
Okay.
It's, yeah. No. Most most of the, the staff who are on contract have been there for more than 5 years.
Okay,
Jeffrey, in your case, it's very different. If you are employed on a month-to-month contract, that contract comes to an end or it expires, and the employer offers you a new contract of employment for a particular duration, the employer may offer you, let's say, for example, a particular salary. And you know jobs are very scarce. It's very difficult in this presence to play hard to get by saying, I'm not interested in what you're offering me. So unless if the terms and conditions compared to the other employees who you are sharing, who you are doing the same jobs, are not the same, that will be an unfair labor practice. But all you have to do is to go back to HR and inquire as to why are you not getting the same amount with the other employees. But there could be reasons. Some employees would be offered more based on your experience, on their experience. For argument's sake, if one of the employees has been in the system for more than 15 years and then you got 3, whereas you don't expect them to pay you the same salary as the employee who's getting a higher amount than yourself.
Okay, Lebo, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Yes, how are you, sir?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm currently in the job market. I was previously a communications manager. Mm-hmm. And when I look at various posts that are advertised, they offer less than what I was getting at my previous employment. So I wanted to find out, would it be wiser, you know, to go for those posts with a lesser package? And grow within the organization, or should I try to negotiate to get, you know, exactly what I was getting, or maybe to negotiate even to get more? And then if you say yes, how do I go about doing that?
Very good question. Thank you, Lebo.
Okay. The first thing to do in your case is to compare your current salaries to, let's say, competitors. But don't lose sight of your key performance areas, the skills that they require. Job titles at times can be misleading. Job titles can be evaluated differently by different job evaluation committee. Now, if you want to get exposure and acquire more experience, it will be wiser for you to go that route, because you know that when you go for higher positions, you have more skills and expertise to put forward. Remember, when you go for an interview, the company is interested in your skills, not personality traits.
But what if Lebo is already experienced?
Well, experience goes with different exposure, because he may be experienced in a particular field, which may not offer him exposure in a particular job activity. Now, the more experience and exposure he acquires from different companies, the more he's going to be sort of skilled. Sometimes we use the word multi-skilled. So if Jeffrey wants to acquire more skills and exposure, the better. Because for him to go and compete with other job competitors, job applicants, he may find himself in a awkward position where he cannot offer what the other competitors are offering in terms of the skill that they have to offer to the company.
But let's say I'm a TV producer and I right. work at SABC.
Right.
And I'm just fed up with the SABC. But they pay me 50,000 rand per month. Mm-hmm. I see a position being advertised at ENCA. Mm-hmm. And they are advertising it for 30,000 rand. But the job specs are identical to what I'm currently doing at SABC. Mm-hmm. Do I apply for that 30,000 rand advertised job, and then if I'm made the offer, then try my luck and say, sorry guys, I think I'm actually worth 50,000, or do I not put my name in the hat at all?
Well, it would be, first of all, if you apply for a job that offers you less than what you're currently getting, it will be disastrous for you to apply for that position, because there's no way that the employer would reconsider or, for argument's sake, give you a platform to come and negotiate for more. So it would be advisable to stick with your job in your current position. Remember, you don't change jobs simply because of monetary issues. you have to consider the company culture, the company that you're going to employ, a reputable company, the distance between you and the prospective employer, organizational, you name it. So it will be wise for you to stick with SABC despite the fact that you're not happy, because employers don't create jobs to make their employees happy. Sure. You have to offer a service.
Okay, 11:30, we're going to take one or two more of your calls. We'll do this for another 10 minutes. Obviously, salary talk is something that all of us have an interest in, and we'll wrap the conversation on the other side of this. Yes.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
28 minutes before noon, we're wrapping our conversation that we are having about salary agreements and how to structure them, how to negotiate these things. They can be very tricky in world of work, with Otis Letswalo, who's a human resources and employee consultant. Zanella, welcome to this conversation.
How's it, Eusebius?
Good, thank you.
I just had a comment for Otis, perhaps, and the listeners, perhaps an alternative view. I'm in the same industry as him, so we do executive search and talent management. And I'd like to say that I think people don't know how much leeway they actually do have around negotiation. I mean, if you think that you deserve, I mean, you had a particular question where you said, I don't want to show you my pay slip because it may jeopardize what you may decide to pay me. We've had candidates who've said exactly that to big listed companies. They said, what do you think this job is worth? If you think this job should pay X, then pay me X. What I was on before doesn't matter. And companies have gone on to pay them that. So that was the first thing. The second one around payslip. I mean, no payslip, yes, a dummy payslip. Always ask for a dummy payslip. Different companies structure their packages differently. So the same company can offer you 1.5 million rand, but your take home will vary depending on how they structure their packages. Most companies don't have a problem, you know, doing that for candidates. And I think I had one more point, but I forgot.
Yeah, but let's stick with that one for now. All of these are excellent. Thank you, Zanella. I can't imagine that they think that there's anything from a negotiation point of view that will disadvantage them if they were to print out a dummy payslip. Can you tell me what your take is on the other issue that I see lots of people are agreeing and disagreeing with each other about on Twitter, which is the question of a payslip from my previous place of employment? How important is it to play hard to get in terms of revealing it?
You are not obligated to give an employer your payslip from your previous job. And it does disadvantage you. It's very seldom where a person, let's say you're on 500K and the job is paying a million. It's very seldom if a client sees that you're on 500, feels that you're capable of doing the 1 million rand job purely based on your payslip. So they may think, oh, this person is very junior, maybe not at the right level, when in fact there are a number of reasons why you haven't received an increase. You've been in the same company for 20 years, so you've missed out on the 20% premium of changing jobs in the market, or, you know, any number of things that could affect that. So sometimes clients insist, but at other times, candidates are well within their rights, and they do say, and we have placed candidates who've said, not going to show you what I'm currently on. What do you think this job is pitched at? What do you think it's worth? Pay me what it's worth. And clients have said, okay, we'll do that. And they've gone on to do that. So I'm not saying Otis's view is wrong. I'm just saying sometimes people just don't know how much flexibility they really do have.
Just a last question, Zanella. Out of interest, those clients of yours that have insisted or attempted to insist on asking for your previous payslip, is there any interesting, honest, innocuous reason why sometimes they ask for that?
I would think that they're trying to benchmark, right?
Okay.
Trying to benchmark where you're at, what somebody else probably says you're worth in terms of your skill and capability, because there's a perception that what I'm being paid now is a reflection of my skill and capability. And I'm saying that, you know, the way talent has evolved over the years, I think, is no longer there. I think I'm able to say I'm great at what I do. This is what I believe I should be paid. And it's up to the company to then decide if it's something that they can do.
Fair enough.
I also don't think that, you know, you need to be bolshy and rude about it. But it's okay to be aggressive in negotiating for yourself.
Thanks, Anela. Thanks so much for your intervention. Christian, good morning to you. Okay, we'll see whether we can go back to Christian in a second. Two things I wanted to touch on just before we close the conversation, Otis. The first is, how different is the conversation about my salary package at the beginning of me entering the company versus a conversation about my performance and whether or not I should get a raise?
Okay. In this case, the performance management policy and procedures come into play. Most companies always want to monitor and evaluate the skills that their employees possesses and the performance during a particular period. Now, those that the company would assign your supervisor for argument's sake to conduct a performance appraisal. This is to appraise the job that you've been doing for the past 6 months or 12 months. And they'll give you a rating for each particular activity that you have been assessed on. Now, the rating may be on a rating scale of 1 being poor, 5 being excellent. If the company gives you 4 or 3, then there will be a benchmark that they will use as to how much percentage are they going to offer you. That will determine your performance bonus. And automatically, the final outcome will be the salary review that you're going to be entitled to. Some companies always offer the employees a flat rate, which they normally use as across the board. Now, but they will say, if you have been rated below 3, for argument's sake, you will get what the company is offering on a flat rate. But if you get more than 5, the company would convert that extra percentage into monetary terms, and it will determine the salary that you're going to be awarded in terms of your performance.
We're going to leave it there for today. Otis, thank you so much for coming in.